He's the integrative cardiologist with a heart. It's the Dr. Decker Weiss Show.
Well, today we're not talking about cardiology or integration. We're talking about what scares us, and that is what drives people to do heinous crimes, to do terrorism, to go to a place that we seldom thought people could go to, that humans could hurt each other in a way that is unimaginable. We're talking about everything from the Middle East terrorism to at home, Columbine, Sandy Hook, Virginia Tech. But all these things had something in common, and that is a person had to choose to do it. And with us today is an expert in this field, and I'm talking about possibly the expert in this field, and it's Dr. Scott Atran. He's director of research at ARTIS, A-R-T-I-S, and he's the author of many, many, many books and papers. But for this purpose, he has a wonderful book called Talking to the Enemy, Faith, Brotherhood, and the Unmaking of Terrorists. Dr. Atran, welcome to the show. Dr. Atran, are you with us? Welcome to the show. Can you hear us, sir?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just start with the title of our segment. Is there a simple formula to build a brain that's willing to do these terrorism and do these heinous crimes, or is it a collection of the way they grow up? How should we be viewing this?
Well, there are really different kinds of terrorism. There is the sort that you were describing of the rampage shooters and the lone wolf assassins. And then there's the kind of group terrorism like the anarchists or the Red Brigades or the jihadis of modern times. And they're actually different in certain respects. So the jihadi, the ones that do 9/11, mm-hmm. actions like that, tend to span the normal distribution. They were mostly middle class, actually, except for the 9/11 bombers, mostly married, fairly well-educated, university students. Like most revolutionary groups, led by medical students, actually.
Really?
And for some reason, engineers and urban planners as well, people who can show commitment. While rampage shooters tend to be have much more... much deeper psychological problems, personal psychological problems. And we find that much more common among the rampage shooters at the universities and high schools here in the United States, or among white supremacist killers on the far right. So again, they share commonalities in terms of their willingness to kill people. But that, of course, is also the product of the human brain. You can get pretty much anybody to kill someone in a certain circumstance. In fact, if you think about it, most of us have thoughts about murder on the average of 6 times a day.
Is there some people... So you're telling me everybody has that switch that they can murder?
We are evolved. Of course. I mean, ever since human beings managed to pretty much conquer the environment of dangerous animals, humans have been the worst predators, and that dates back since the Pleistocene. And we've had to evolve mechanisms to defend ourselves and to kill, and that can be tripped by any number of environmental or societal cues. Now, the thing about, again, revolutionary or organized terrorist groups is they get into a sort of parallel universe where they see themselves killing more out of love than hate. I mean, there's really not all that much expression of, there is some, of course, but there's not all that much expression of hate. What's more important is they think they're doing it for the love of their group. How they get into that mindset is an interesting story. It's the pathway to violence that usually involves friends and, to some extent, families. I mean, the best predictor of who gets involved in terrorist groups is who your friends are.
Is that like that soccer team that you told me about?
Yeah.
There was a soccer team where all these kids came that were the ones who did the, you know, the suicide bombings in the Palestinian territories?
Sure. If you look at the deadliest wave of suicide bombings in the Second Intifada, it was from January 2003 to June 2004. 2003, and 10 of them were from a single soccer team. The El Jihad soccer team in Hebron, and one neighborhood called the Wadi Hatila neighborhood, and all those young men wanted to go to the local polytechnic institute to train for engineering. And the only suicide bombing since the ceasefire with the Hamas back in 2004 has been a suicide bombing in 2008 in Dimona. And the two kids who carried that out were on the junior team, who hadn't gotten the chance to emulate their friends and peers back way in 2003. So given the chance, they were eager to go. And when you look at the young people, like the ones who grew up to blow the trains in Madrid in 2004, who carried out the slaughter on the London Underground in 2005, who hoped to blast airlines out of the skies and loot the United States in 2006, 2009, or who were still planning to kill as many Westerners as possible and journey far to the dying fields and killing fields in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, or Somalia, when you look at whom they idolize, how they organize, what bonds them, what drives them, then you see that what inspires the most lethal terrorists in the world today isn't so much the Quran or religious teaching as it is a thrilling cause and call to action that promises glory and esteem in the eyes of friends. Through friends, the eternal respect and remembrance in the wider world they'll never live to enjoy. You know, the jihad is an egalitarian, equal opportunity employer. It's fraternal, fast-breaking, thrilling, glorious, and it's cool.
So in a weird sort of way, they're trying to be rock stars?
Yep. I mean, after the Madrid bombing was the second most lethal bombing after 9/11 in the Western world, and actually led to a change of regime in Spain. I mean, the Conservative Party was poised to win the elections. The bombing occurred, and the prime minister at the time, José María Aznar, blamed it on ETA. And he had reasons for warning the people to think it was ETA. When they found out it was jihadi, they voted them out of power, even though the conservatives had been leading in the polls. Now, five of the seven guys who blew themselves up after they were cornered by the police came from one neighborhood in northern Morocco, the Jemaah Mezouak. They grew up in 200 meters of one another. Their school had Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and Goofy scribbled over the wall. And you ask yourself, why these guys? But when you look at the guys who blew themselves up in Iraq, 54 came from one neighborhood in Bakuba, Libya. Now, it can't be the 54 psychopaths from the same neighborhood. Again, they get into a network and where they think that this is the way to glory. So I did this interview, wow. Right? Mm-hmm. I went to the neighborhood and I asked the kids who were sort of, it's a poor neighborhood, religious neighborhood, but not a miserable neighborhood. And I asked the kids,
we have about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Uh-huh. Who are your heroes? Number one hero was the soccer star. Number two was the Terminator. Number three was Bin Laden. And when I went back after Obama's election, number one was still a soccer star. Number two was Terminator 2. And number three, just beating out Bin Laden, was Barack Obama. Shows you that they're at a point in their lives where they want to choose who their heroes are. And in some cases, they choose the wrong one.
Well, I'm glad that you're out there writing books, doing research in order to let us know what the real thoughts of these people who commit these crimes are, where they're coming from in order to stop it. Dr. Scott Atran is the author of the book Talking to the Enemy, Faith, Brotherhood, and the Unmaking of Terrorists. This book came out October 19, 2010, and we hope you keep writing them more and more. Dr. Atran, thank you for being on this segment with Radio MD and RadioMD.com.
My pleasure, and thanks for having me, Dr.